Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Mickey Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Thursday morning, join Jeremy as he hosts the Headliners Ball. Friday morning, break on through with Pam. Saturday, join Afasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. And Sunday morning, or every other Sunday morning, join Robert M. as he hosts the Solace of Shadows. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, let's see. As I always say, life is good. Looking forward to the poetry tonight, hanging out with you and maybe some other cool poets. I don't know about everybody else, but I really liked your quotes that you chose. And, I had a lot of fun playing with my chosen quotes that I wrote too. So, got outside today, had that kind of perfect temperature where it was in the 70s. And, there's a slight breeze and the sun was shining, all that. So life is good.
Excellent.
Yes.
Tonight, it's Shanti quote, Nike Thrones and quotes from LBJ, that loose ball jacket.
A little bit different of a choice, but I liked it. I really did. Very cool quotes.
I thought, what the hell? And, it wasn't quite the usual fare or something a whole lot of people took to. Maybe they know the man too much.
Yeah, but you know what? I know you and I have talked about this before. I had talked with Dexter about this on the last Double Helix show. Sometimes you get prompts and people just flock to it quickly. For every 10 views, you're getting a write. And other times, it's happened to every single one of us. Sometimes a prompt prompts are just a miss for one reason or another. Sometimes it just happens that way, even to the best of us. But that's okay, because the stuff we do have, I've done a sneak peek at it, and it is all top-notch quality. It is top-shelf drinking material, right? Is that where the expensive stuff comes from, is the top shelf?
Yep.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, well, we have a caller, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, and I'd like to say welcome to Lawrence. Hi, Lawrence. Glad you could join us.
Hey, thank you. Hello, Pam. Hello, Rex. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Lawrence. How are you doing?
Doing great. Awesome. I'm glad to see that you were inspired, Lawrence. Very cool.
Yes, and explicitly, I might add.
Ooh, explicitly. I'll have to get out the...
Let's say I was encouraged explicitly.
Oh. Okay. Oh, man. I thought you meant I was going to have to get out the bleeper and, bleep you a whole bunch.
No, not tonight. Although I will say LBJ was one profane president.
Right. Yeah, my right is explicit if you live in, Victorian England. But in modern days, it's not too bad. All right, well, What do you say, Intimidus Rex?
Let's roll it.
Ready? All right. And up first, we'll start with some humor. We have LBJ by Lawrence67. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
LBJ by Lawrence67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie, Alfie. Hey, hey, I got me an LBJ. Hey, hey, I got me an LBJ. Hey, Nigel, what you got there? Hey, Alfie, looky here, what I got? Hold on, Nigel, while I piss in your tent. What you say you got there, an LBJ? What's that? It's lettuce, bacon, and jalapeno sandwich. Yum, yum. Sounds delicious. All I got here is this chicken shit salad. Dumbass, you're so stupid you can't fart and chew gum at the same time. Can too, watch. Chew, chew, chew. Chew, chew, chew. You're stupid, Alfie. Hey, Nigel. What, Alfie? Hey, Nigel. Come down here, man. What? What you want, man? One bourbon, one scotch, one beer, and pumps. Take it.
Well, first of all, awesome read there, Rex. Your read alone had me laughing, along with the humor in the poem. I always enjoy Lawrence 67's Nigel and Alfie skit. I like the humor in this. I like how he played off of several of the prompts and fit them in into the conversation. I probably would have gone with lettuce, bacon, and jelly just because it sounds ridiculous, but lettuce, bacon, and jalapeno actually sounds pretty good to me. I liked how some of them were like just one word, like idiot, after he'd say something stupid. It has that nice back and forth. I have to say, though, my favorite was that ending where he tied the bourbon quote in with a George Thorogood song. That was just very clever. So excellent write and great laughs and very well done.
Thank you, Ian. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, instead of hey, hey, ho, ho, LBJ has got to go, we're giving hey, hey, I got me an LBJ. I like the way he kind of used that tagline from the 60s, because there was a lot of ho-ho, LBJ has got to go. I guess I should know who Nigel and Alfie are. I see it's a series of adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie. I, too, like the way he managed to integrate a couple of quotes in there, and I like the ending.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Yep, he did, man. I got, when I saw the LBJ, I thought, what's he going to turn this one into? And damned if he didn't go with the sandwich end of it, lettuce, bacon, and jalapeno. But he rolled with the chicken salad quote. You're so stupid you can't fart and chew gum at the same time. He got that in there. And another one, two more. There was that quote with the, I'd rather have my enemy in the tent pissing out. Then outside the tent pissing in. We got that one in there too, as well as the bourbon angle. And I got a kick out of the throwing with George Thorogood as well. And mighty humorous there, Lawrence. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right. Put up the next one. All right. Up next, we have Come Closer by Leela and Laurent. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I will. Come Closer. I should put on my glasses before I screw something up. There may be foul mud under the fire. As a morning traveler, the fire is well known. A scorpion's unfulfilled plan waits for me, sucking my pain and the fruit of my blisters. Do you have any bets to place? The odds are against you, you know. The path I choose leads me to evil. My fancy is best. I keep my hands intact. Dark gate slips out. Embrace the all-consuming power of hate with the sun in full view. Let each imagine the hill where Virgil's tent once stood. At midday, while I sleep, the leaves don't tremble. Growing lilacs flow through the air, and armistice, even the eye may not be awake then. But murmuring and reciting in procession, ye shut the dog fiends. You shake urine from the bladder, from the soul of a flea. In the barren gloom, with a mutt song raging, oh, how weary it's to stay awake, pitched in your sleep. Come closer, as the saber-toothed cat comes. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent. And Leela took better to have your enemies in the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in. All right, Pam. Yeah.
All right. Wonderful read there, Lauren. You know, I got a couple different thoughts from this. The first thought I had was, well, it had brilliant imagery and metaphors, and I thought it was an excellent write on recognizing that some people inflict poison and pain into your life. But I also felt like it had this, because, you know, it says, do you have any bets to place? The odds are against you, you know. I felt like it was about, like, the main idea was the saber-toothed cat representing the big guy and the scorpion that hides in the earth, you know, and sneaks up representing the small guy. And the idea that, you know, the bigger one doesn't recognize the danger they're in. Like, they underestimate their opponent. And I really like Leela's use of imagery and metaphors. I have to say, within this, though, my absolute favorite stanza was the third one. It's the path I choose leads me to evil. My fancy is bed. I keep my hands intact. Dark gate slips out. Embrace the all-consuming power of hate. With the sun in full view, let each image imagine the hill where Virgil's tent once stood. You know, and I assume that's Virgil from Dante's Inferno, I think, but I'm not really sure. But I like that part because it feels like the whole idea of not being able to turn away from your path of destiny. So just a powerful and thought-provoking write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I like that third stanza as well. It has a lot to say about the all-consuming power of hate, even in the light of the sun. I also like that midday while I sleep, the leaves don't tremble. Growing lilacs flow through the air, and armistice, even the eye may not be awake then. A little something to do with sleeping in peace. There's no wind, there's nothing to bother you, the leaves don't tremble. And I can't say I don't like that last stanza either. Not the two line, but the shuck the dog feed, you shake urine from the bladder. From the soul of a flea. That's nicely done. As is the old poem.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Laurent. I like that opening note. There may be foul mud under the fire. As a morning traveler, the fire is well known. It's like that. Those Halloween jokes that have been so well done over the years. The paper bag full of dog shit that you put on your neighbor's porch, and you set it on fire and ring the doorbell. So he comes out, stamps all over, only to find himself wallowed in that shit, so to speak. Scorpion's unfold plan waits for me. sucking my pain and the fruit of my blisters. Nice touch of that, the scorpion being that thing that hides just enough. I like the bet angle. The odds are against you. And the stance that you two were attracted to was a nice touch as well. And you're right about that, that while I sleep, that peaceful note. But that that second to last stanza, the long one, the murmuring and reciting in procession, you shucked the dog face. Boy, that was one hell of a stanza itself. And oh, how weary it is to stay awake and piss in your sleep. As the note of keeping one's eye open. And then I thought, come close, as the saber-tooth cat comes. There's always something raging around the back door, so to speak. And hey, you might have your enemies close. It doesn't mean you're comfortable with the position that you've put yourself in. And that's how it goes sometimes. Nicely done, Alila. Thank you very much. Where do you want to go next?
I have to say, Rex, I really like how you touched on the second to last stanza. Yeah, another thing I really like about this poem is that she put the I in here, which is also a poisonous animal. In fact, it's one of the that and the platypus, and I can't remember if there's another one, but the platypus and the I are both poisonous mammals. So I thought that was a nice touch. And
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, they're small, they're cute, they got big eyes, they're nocturnal, and you want to stay away from them.
It's a lemur, right?
Yeah, sure is. Madagascar. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
What are we up to next?
Up next, we have The Kitchen by Man529, and it goes like this. Things you see in the kitchen, raging heat, bad-tempered chefs rushing in dirty dishes, pots and pans, pot washer feeding the dishwasher, he wipes his brow, doors opening and closing as ticket orders come on to the pass. Standing about, waiting staff are asked, is table two away yet? Crash, he's banging a wok on the counter. Head chef starts yelling, swearing, cursing. He shouts, listen to what I'm saying. In comes a steak back on its plate. He screams, what the fuck is wrong with that? Said, it's not cooked right. He asked for a medium rare. Said, you've overcooked it instead. Steam comes out of his ears and turned bright red. Sarcastically, he said, bet he's watched a TV program now. He thinks he's a bleeding chef. Waitress turns away out of the kitchen. She fled. Pity he ain't having soup. I'd spat in it. But put another one on and this time get it right. In walks the general manager. Chef straights his back. This time the steak is cooked to perfection. Now the chef is everything all right. I've heard pots and pans banging about from my office. Head chef looks innocent. You must be mistaken. It's such a quiet night in here. And home.
Gregory Tam and Man took the quote. Don't skip the soup. We all got to eat. nice touch, man. Laurent, why don't you start us off?
Yep. He used the line about spitting in the soup. Perhaps it could have been used differently, but it works. I enjoy the set piece of the chef completely angry at whoever returned the steak, but then calmly cooking it to perfection as the general manager walked in. And he does ask, you know, I've heard pots and pans banging. You must be mistaken. It's such a quiet night in here. An innocent enough statement, but it kind of harkens back to the prop because it almost says the same thing as the prop. The noise making and the anger were like spitting in a soup, I think. And there were immediate repercussions, so I thought it worked well.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, I really enjoyed this one. First of all, I noticed that Nan wrote this about her memories from her life as a waitress while my family grew up. So I'm guessing that spit in the soup line might have actually been something that was said, and the prompt just made her think of that, which I thought was a really great idea to connect the prompt with her memories. I have to say, it was really fun seeing Nan drop the F-bomb. I don't think I've ever seen that before. I told her that this, it cracked me up, but I have no doubt because, well, I've never been a waitress, but I have worked stressful jobs where I've seen people lose it, including myself. So, you know, I have no doubt that it probably wasn't very funny at the time, but I like that she shared this memory, these stories with us. And I'd actually think it would be cool for her to share more stories about her days working as a waitress and some of the customers she's dealt with and some of the people she had to work with. And what I really like about this is how she so very well describes in the beginning what it's like to work in a kitchen with the rushing around and the pots banging. And then wraps this right up so nicely in that ending with the head chef looks innocent. You must be mistaken. It's such a quiet night in here. Just very clever, a great presentation, and very well done.
Wow, thank you, ma'am. It's actually a good reputation, a good representation of a normal kitchen. It is all noise. It is all heat. And there's always some shouting going back and forth because you got to be heard above the din. That includes the, like the wok being banged down. You've got saucepans being banged. You've got everything going into the dish room that's getting banged about because everything is pretty much aluminum that gets cooked in. And then there's the pots, the pans, everything else you get going on. And yet you do get irate when you put something out that's on the right note. And it comes back, and it's not done enough. And they think, well, it's not medium rare enough. Actually, it is medium rare. The problem is rare. So the idea of not understanding what is as opposed to what isn't is something we've all dealt with on that on the back end of this. Now, as far as the general manager knows, too, there's always noise. There might be a little bit more now and then, but that usually comes with the yelling. So that hits on the spot, too. But I did like the, now he thinks he's a bleeding chef. He saw something on TV and thought with what the fuck is wrong with that, a true note. And let's see what else. Oh, the thought with a wait staff hanging out. Yeah, they usually hang out and keep bothering you because they want. And then when it is ready to go, they're no way to be found. So we usually ran with a system where we had the runners, so it didn't matter who was in the kitchen at the time. If there was an order up, as soon as it hit the window, somebody was running it out, one of the other wait staff. They didn't share the tips at all. It was an understood knowledge that it might not be your table you're running, but the food goes out hot as soon as it hits the window. The general idea of making sure a kitchen works efficiently. Now, as far as the spit in the soup bit, we get regularly checked by the health inspector. So I get to know the guys in the lesser places. We got told a whole lot of horror stories, like the Chinese place that took the turtle out of the pond in the back and went to using it for one of their soups, or the cat that used to hang out back. They kept disappearing. Well, turtle soup is a Chinese delicacy, so no big deal. They find a turtle, they use it. It's a freebie.
Oh, my gosh.
or the finger rubbers you find in the soup here and there. I've heard that story many times as well. Or the
I can imagine the
Band-Aids in the McDonald's burgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you hear all kinds of horror stories. That's for sure. Yeah, I kind of figured you'd be able to relate with to this one, especially with your past kitchen experience. So, but one of the things I can
may I just strike up a note to the poor dishwasher, because he's the most overlooked person in the kitchen all the time. Yet everything is going to grind to a halt without clean dishes. When I was going to school up in Lake Placid for college, I got morning work at the Thunderbird Motor Inn. I forget the name of the athlete who owned it. He was a famous ski jumper. But it's one of the most horrible jobs that I ever had, 7 to 11, just washing dishes nonstop. And I'll tell you what, if you don't get good at it real quick, you're going to fall way, way behind. And then you will piss off the chef.
Oh, yes, you will. Yeah, it's a hard and miserable job. You're soaked in sweat. You're soaked in the water spilling, the hot water that comes out of the dishwasher, especially if it's one of those that has a single door to open to shove in rather than the feed-through. Because they got these machines where you feed the rack in, and it automatically goes through the machine at a pace that hits on all the right notes from proper clean to sanitized at the end. But those single door machines, they suck. Every time it shuts off, you got to open it up, and you got to grab that as the hot water is dripping down from the top, because you got to throw the next one in. It ain't no easy.
Yeah, well, to this day, my dishwashing skills are enviable.
Oh, yes. We always had at least two, sometimes three. One just for the pots and pans, and one for the continuing stream of dishes and glass that need to be washed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
Ah, right. Well, I'm actually going to have us do a couple of carryovers from the last Break On Through show. And so up next we have Demitasse Green Word by Liquid Mind Forever. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Demitasse Greenwood by Liquid Mind Forever. When I write and mess taken out of ego self, I don't give a shit about anything else but not just some stupid-ass rumblings to answer some dipshit poetry contest fun. Exoplasm in otherworldly trance. No pretense. No cholera, no tonsillitis to escape classroom mud-cold monotony. No porcelain, up-chucking toilet, rich to flush, dreams of a slimy porno, rare white cream, pivotal stage iconography. Ice cube isolation, some constellation for masturbation. Ill-mannered publicans of the Reed condomination, three nations under no god, fourth wall shenanigans, theatrical pantomime in verse breathe rabid rhyme, abate, state, downtime, time, green, wood, ware. On the shelf, wait for barren prison heights to fire grassy, muddy reality. Steppy, iffy, happy faces face east. Grease lightning, aims, profane, lame arcane of cold fame. And thanks. All right, ma'am, what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. I was really impressed with this write. I actually gave it the gold in the contest, and it was the contest with the artwork of Ronique Baranga. And as I always say in my in our Break On Through contest, you know, push the envelope, think outside the box. You don't need to take prompts literally. And I thought this had, first of all, I liked her use of spacing and scattering to create a sense of movement in the lines. And it was almost chaotic looking. I thought it was a wonderful vignette. To me, the main themes that it spoke on for me that I saw within it was that it gave thought of freedom of expression and going deeper into interpretation. And also, I got in the idea of female sexuality treated as a crime. My favorite parts of this, I thought it powerful imagery and metaphors. And parts 2 and 5 were definitely my favorites. I really liked fourth wall shenanigans, theatrical pantomime, inverse breeze and rapid rhyme, abate equals states, dry time, crime. And then the part 2, ectoplasm and otherworldly trance to escape classroom mud coiled monotony, no porcelain upchucking toilet in which to flush streams of slimy porno. Just extremely visceral imagery, a look at trying so desperately to escape the monotony of learning in a classroom. Just an extremely strong write and very well done.
Wow. Thank you very much, Dan. How about you, Ron?
Well, I'd be really lost if I hadn't just heard Pam provide some inspiration. I've read this now sitting here about 6 times. And if there's anybody who can really foul up my understanding of poetry, it is this young lady, Liquid Mind Forever. Some of her stuff I just grasp immediately. Other things I really have to strain after. But I do like several parts of this. When I write enmeshed, taken out of ego self, and that is a very good description in my mind of when it is best to write. When you're not so preoccupied with yourself, but that you do let things flow. To the extent that she talks about ectoplasm and otherworldly trance. Now, ectoplasm, I believe, is whatever there is that is solid, if you will, about a ghost or a spiritual apparition. And it's done without pretense, which I thought was clever. No cholera nor tonsillitis to escape classroom mud-coiled monotony, in reference to your comment, Pam, about a learning in school and class. I do see the female sexuality immediately followed by a mild insult to the Republicans, the Republicans of the re-conglomeration, which I also thought that was very cleverly done. I have no idea what fourth wall shenanigans means at all, and I'm not sure I understand Greenwood Ware, but I like all of her pieces. They're deep and they require a certain amount of, if not intelligence, discipline to follow appropriately. I admire everything she does, including this piece.
Excellent. Thank you. I got to hit on that first stanza also is a kind of relation to the, where the hell was it? Oh, to the Euclidean stage iconography and some small constellations of masturbation. I thought that ice cube isolation was a nice fade in with that some call constellation for masturbation. That nice kind of being over-rich. That fourth wall shenanigans kind of hits me like the fourth estate, meaning the news, theatrical pantomime and this breeds rabid rhyme. A base equals state, dry time, crime. Again, that kind of notation to mental masturbation. And the Greenwood Ware on the shelf waits, the barren friggin' height, the fire, raccoon, muddy reality. The Greenwood kind of hits on the newness, the sort of youthful exuberance, so to speak. That which he's waiting for, the heat, the sensuality or sexuality to walk within it, but it's coming across as muddy because of all the things that are going on. The happy, hippie, happy faces face east. I get the generalization that might be looking at the sort of communism. Brief lightning, aims to fame, landmark can of cold fame. Again, Greek lightning, kind of listening with that note of going through you like going through a goose, like Greek lightning. Too much shit rolling in and not enough space to get the damn stuff out. But anyway, thank you, Liquid. I like that. All right, Cam.
All right. Great observations there, gentlemen. Oh, and just so you know, Lawrence, Greenwood is actually a company that makes pottery. And if you get a chance to look at the prompts in the contest, you'll see how she was leaned in that direction.
All righty. Thank you.
And Raku is Chinese porcelain. Usually used for the teapot.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And up next we have Save Your Hands by Rain 474. And Lawrence, will you give that a Easter egg, please?
Yes, I will, Pam. Save Your Hands. The leaves of the tree, small they may be, is an integral bee. The greenness in her cooks food with care so she could stay longer, while the ugly stump seems to be the hump that forms the backbone. Each one is important, playing their part eminent, making it a blessed Clement, opening its arms wide for your ailing soul to rest and regain strength to its best, shaking off inflictions of war. Oh, arms of hope, you become the slope where closed eyes seem to end, but your gentle brush made me extend. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, since this is the back end of that contest, maybe you could illumine what was top 16.
Well, you know, this was a wonderful contest. It's so many great rights in it, you know. This one had definitely a more gentle feel to it. I thought it had lovely imagery and metaphors. And it was a wonderful write on the, I mean, and it wasn't completely gentle because there were some harshness to it, but it to me, the general message that I got from it was how the pressures of life weighs heavy on us and that everyone needs a helper of some sort or another, you know. And oftentimes it's the people who are always out there helping everyone else that find themselves thinking the most and need that helping hand. I really liked, while the ugly stump seems to be the hump but forms the backbone, each one is important, playing their part eminent, making it less clement. You know, you see the idea of each member of the beehive, each member of society being an important part, and the idea of being bent over by the pressures of life. And I really liked how there was almost a very prayerful quality in those ending lines. As you look at the idea of shaking off the inflictions of war and, oh, arms of hope, you become the slope where closed eyes seem to end, but your gentle brush made me extend. Sometimes all you need is somebody reaching out and saying everything is going to be okay to be able to stand up again. So wonderful life and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, you got to read it. What about you?
Well, I think we run into a lot of things in life that can help us. And sometimes it seems to be an ugly stump or a hump actually is the backbone and the strength to which can help us, and all the things that can help us are important. When you have somebody who can open their eyes wide to let you rest, heal your sick soul, to offer you some kind of solace or to cease from the pain that you feel, those are indeed arms of hope. Great peace.
Thank you, Ron. I'm kind of walk that same way between the title itself and those last two stanzas. It kind of offers up that notion of walk within spiritual quality, and you'll never be so much alone or empty either. There is that note of being able to, like that shaking off afflictions, as well as that note to cleansing oneself in the moment. And then at the bottom, oh, arms of hope, you became the slope where closed eyes seemed end, but your gentle brush made me extend. There is that that sort of opening oneself up spiritually to the point where you actually see, instead of being closed to what seems end, now your eyes open to what actually is there. And that gentle brush then gives strength to not actually pick oneself up, but also to move on with a lighter heart rather than heavy. Thank you, Rain. All right, Pam. We're back to you.
All right. Up next we have, there's many a true word spoken in jest by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Well-known sayings are usually trite, but true. As in, better to have your enemies in the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in. But imagine how helpful they would be if said tent was a burning inferno. There's also this adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. However, consider this. How long would it take said friends to come to your aid while you were being attacked by your enemies who were standing right next to you? The moral to this story, or you knew there would be one, is simply, any job worth doing is worth doing well, because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So, hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Excellent read there, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Laurent, what do you think?
I love the way that she kind of ends things with those three aphorisms. it's placed right there. I've always wondered about that saying. Personally, I want my enemies as far away from me as I can possibly get them. I would like my friends as close to me as I absolutely can. To keep your enemies closer, to me, just means being aware of who they are and where they are. Don't get next to me. Thank you very much. Very clever, very funny, very true.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, this one had me smiling all the way through. It was clever. It was filled with humor and wisdom. I like how, for me, the main theme is learning to think for yourself in every individual situation. Like the idea of, it's better to have your enemies pissing out, but she says, what if your tent is on fire? Maybe it would help for them to be pissing in. Or, the as Lauren pointed out, the one after that. And what I like is she just really wrapped this up so nicely, which made the grin on my face get even bigger with the moral to the story, well, you knew there would be one, is simply. And then she hits us with a couple of cliches that are so nicely placed. So definitely an excellent write that's filled with humor, and yet at the same time does make a little bit of a serious message. And to me, the whole idea of, hey, you know what? You can't just go by quotes and never think for yourself. You actually have to use the old noggin every once in a while. So very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, PM. I like the bite and dry wit, especially that opening stanza. But imagine how helpful they would be if said tent was a burning inferno. A nice touch to that quote, pissing out rather than pissing in. And the idea of keeping your friends closer, your enemies closer, is, again, it can be dubious if you don't pay attention to exactly what's going on, which is what the back end is for. If you're going to keep them close, you better understand to expect the worst out of them. So the idea is you hope for the best and you prepare for the worst because, hey, not everything is black and white. All right, Pam, what you get next?
All right. Up next, we have The Bull Rider by S. Sharp, and we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
The Bull Rider. Wrestling steer and stonewall, breaking wild horses. One hand through the bull loop, one in the air, 8 seconds. Assassin, shooting in Dealey Plaza, Kennedy down, Johnson inauguration, first second. Dust stirs as the bull leaves the ground. Legislation, elementary and secondary schools act, Miranda rights, civil rights, a voting rights act, war on poverty. The bull, angry, crashes to the ground. Second, second. The crowd screams. Cowboy hangs on as the bull comes down. Thurgood Marshall, Supreme Court, Great Society, prosperity dispersed. Gulf of Tonkin resolution. MLK receives the Nobel Peace Prize. Medicare, Medicaid. Third second. Bull spins and lurches, swallowing his neck, bowing to the earth. Freedom's summer murders. Civil rights workers shot and buried. KKK, crowd momentarily silenced. Selma to Montgomery march. Watts riots, 6 days of unrest. Race riots in Newark and Detroit, 4 seconds. The bull wildly leaping, thrusting into the air. America bombs North Vietnam. James Meredith shot. Black power arises. Malcolm X assassinated. Anti-war marchers storm the Pentagon. Black Panther Party. Yellow eyes on the darkest of nights. 5 seconds. Bull snorting, determined, under the rodeo lights. North Korea captures the USS Pueblo. Vietnam, Tet Offensive. Focus shifts, vulnerabilities exposed. At home, the people fear Vietnam. It's out of control. My Lai massacre. Wallace and Kennedy enter the presidential race. 6 seconds. Rider wavering, thrown violently from side to side. Nationally televised announcement. Johnson will not seek re-election. 7 seconds. Rider flies from the hump, hitting the hard Texas ground. The bull bounds aggressively onward. Cowboy left in a cloud of dust. Martin Luther King assassinated. Columbia University protests. Robert Kennedy killed too. Soviets invade Czechoslovakia. Humphrey nominated. Nixon elected. Brezhnev doctrine sets the future tone. The next rider wows the rodeo crowd.
great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the sound pad. It's much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I am very impressed with this one. All the way through. I really like that he didn't really write to a specific prompt, but wrote to, as he says in his AN, was a mixture of the sense given by the prompts that motivated this write. I thought that was really cool. This actually, it made me think of the song We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, which is an awesome song. I like how it takes us through, I thought it was powerful and hard-hitting. It takes us through a time period of violence and unrest and the fight for human rights. So many different changes in power and election. I thought the bull ride was a great extended metaphor for the kind of, well, not only the bullshit going on, but just the fact that it was a very rough time in history. And it's hard to pick out a part in this that, you know, stood out the most to me, but I think what I would go with is I would say Freedom Summer murders, civil rights workers shot and buried, KKK crowd momentarily silenced, you know, all of that stanza, and then the nationally televised announcement Johnson will not seek re-election, 7-second rider flies from the hump, hitting the hard Texas ground, the bull bound aggressively onward, calls are left in the cloud of dust. I love how he puts together the imagery of the battle between, like, personalities, I would guess. It's a really an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Ron, how about you?
This is a hell of a piece. I appreciate everything that Pam said. I had this funny, I wondered why we were seeing the story of the bull rider, separate story, riding side by side with all of the history. And it struck me that the bull itself could represent the country. The bull rider could represent Johnson. And at the end, when it says, nationally televised announcement, Johnson will not seek re-election, rider flies from the hump, hitting the hard Texas ground. I mean, that's Johnson taking himself right out. And the bull bounds aggressively onward as the country. Now, it says Nixon is elected. President Doctrine sets the future tone. The next rider wows the rodeo crowd. I believe that Nixon is probably that next rider. I could be off base, but otherwise I had a hard time understanding why she would tell the two stories, unless it was a story that somehow was involving Johnson.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. I like your analogy there. I went along with that same thing as Johnson being the bull rider, because it starts off that way. Wrestling steer and Stonewall. Stonewall is Johnson's place of birth. A really, really, really small town, something like 500 people. Yeah. Then he offers up the shooting in Dealey. Johnson inaugurates in 3rd, 2nd, dust stirs as the bull leaves the ground. That would be Johnson. But there's a couple of thoughts in here. Bull spins and lurches, swallowing his neck, bowing to the earth. I had to think of Kennedy in that moment. Then again, rider waving, thrown violently from side to side. Again, that thought to the presidential car going down through Dealey Plaza. You get those moments. It's almost as though he's taking out these seconds and running through the visual from the movie, the home movie that was taken that day, as well as representing both him and Kennedy as the point of how this all came about. And it hits on everything that walk through that time from 64 or 53 up until 58. And the fourth coming near the end here, that second last stanza, rider flies from the hump, hitting the hard Texas ground, bull bounds aggressively onward, cowboy left in the dust. I think that's the boat from, again, rider flies from the hump, the sort of Kennedy falling out of the seat of being the trust at that moment, hitting the hard Texas ground. They were in Texas at the time. But then the bull bounds aggressively forward. That is Johnson. Cowboy left in Augusta. I thought Representative Kennedy once more and how things progressed from there. But he's on a lot of notes in the times, all through the riots, the upgrade to the Vietnam War, the sort of a career taking on the Pueblo. There's a whole and new life that happened in 68, right at near the end of his term. And you're right, the back end of this does fit the next ride a while, so that's incoming Nixon. And yes, we got a wow out of that in the first term, and even a bigger wow in the second. So, nicely done, Scott. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first I'd like to welcome Gray to the show. Welcome, Gray. Glad you could join us.
Pam!
Hey, Gray.
Hey,
how's it
going?
All right.
Hey, Gray.
Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Pretty good. You're up late.
I am, yeah.
He's
is
up late,
late
to hang out
or
with
you guys different time?
Midnight crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, how's that Raven doing? He's still your buddy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are.
Excellent. All right, Pam, where are we going?
All right, Lawrence, I have your poem up next. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Yes, ma'am. Let me just throw a quick like on this last poem, and I can do that. Right, this is called Straining Out a Smile. Pride is the exposure of flesh before teeth. Difficult to rise from impending oblivion, so wrapped up in your ego. Pay attention to both ends, simultaneously, or in saving face, you lose your ass. Regrets and wishes are poison pills, frequently swallowed, washed back with a stiff drink and bluster. You cry, woe, good times gone, naught to come, a daily battle. Form over function. Image preservation at forefront. Failure is an ending you oppose only with a light of dim intentions. To avoid inadequacy, aspirations are a damned treasure best hidden as thought to follow through fails. All dressed up to the nines, a hollow tree clutching its leaves well into the autumn. Neglected roots, barely holding the earth before a season's rough winds. Dysfunction breeds fiasco. Fubar is no rallying cry, just a pile of midden straining out a smile. End poem.
Excellent read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Gray, what do you think?
Well, your talent definitely shines through in these words, capturing the essence of the prompt. Your read was beautiful as well, and I enjoyed the poem from start to finish. You know, I liked your wording and your flow. Just magical.
Thank you, Greg.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Greg. Pam?
Yeah, this was brilliant. It had amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how you used the idea of the tree and the neglected roots as an idea for how, you know, like a person or even a nation can look strong on the surface, but can be easily pushed over when the roots themselves are not strong. I really like this all the way through. But that opening grabs your attention right away. Pride is the exposure of flesh before teeth. Difficult to rise from impending oblivion, so wrapped up in your ego. Pay attention to both ends. Regrets and wishes are poison pills. You cry, woe, good time gone, not to come. A daily battle for form over function. I like how this talks about, you know, the idea of somebody so full of themselves, so wrapped up in their own ego, that they don't notice that the roots are being poisoned, the roots are dying. Wonderful lines all the way through. And another one I really love is dysfunction breeds fiasco. Wonderful lines there, and very well done, Laurent.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. I got to start with the back end of this. Funny that you took that from the back end. Dysfunction breeds fiasco. Fubar is no rallying cry, just a pile of midden. The midden being a pile of shit. And I like the Fubar in here, tucked up beyond all recognition. I think the earliest mention of that came in the late 1800s when it came to the a telegraph because of looking for covering up on the train, so to speak. They came across something that was blown up, I think it was, and they were asked, is it repairable? And the return reply was, it's fucked up beyond all recognition. And that's a good strain there. And the finish, straining out a smile, as well as using that for the title. It kind of hits on the note, straining out a smile, taking a dump. Because you roll that with the mid to the back end, and that kind of hits me with the funny end of it. Johnson disliked the preppy Harvard Yale boys so much that while he was talking policy in the office, he'd be sitting on a throne taking a shit while these guys were
absolutely correct.
While he made them feel so inadequate and out of place, they couldn't understand why this nasty old man would do this kind of thing while talking policy. And they forget, you know what? That's how kings and queens did their business back in the day. That's why they were called the scryers of the loo, which he actually made them. He showed them their places. And he was a frankly nasty old man.
He's pretty profane.
Oh yes, especially when he was a senator. Oh my God, I came across some quotes that today would be looked upon as holy shit. How could you have someone rolling out that kind of language in the House or the Senate and still be a functioning entity within government? Oh, my God.
Well, wait a second now. You know, mind you, his stuff was at least done with some intelligence and some cleverness, as opposed to 45, who couldn't muster those same qualities. You want to talk about Fubar?
Well, I don't ever recall the functioning rhetoric that he used in the Senate as hey, I'll have these nibbles voting for Democrats for the next 200 years. And usually quite often, he was a bigot.
Yeah, but he was he's smart enough to know what he had to do.
And he was also a corrupt criminal. You know, he got busted by the Army in like 42, late or early 43 for stealing money.
Really?
Yeah, and then he got caught. Hey, he cheated his way into his first Senate post, stuffing the ballot boxes with 202 extra votes.
And look, yet he became a seminal figure in many ways.
Because the whole state was on the take.
Well, I thought all politicians were on the take somehow or another.
Actually, most of them are. That's how they're making themselves such a nice, tidy sum, even when nobody's working. Anyway.
Well, now wait a second. Where the unemployment's at 3.5%.
Actually, that's a misnomer. because they stop counting those who are who come off the roll because
are you
not
using
getting
facts
anymore.
To bolster your arguments again?
The what?
Are you using facts to bolster your arguments again?
Hey, I always use facts.
Okay. Who's yours or theirs? All right.
Hey, you want to play that game? We ought to look at the country now as opposed to 2 years ago. It's in a fucking mess.
An awful lot of good legislation just passed.
Oh, yes, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is actually going to steal money out of the pockets of Americans.
Why go for the weakest one first, eh?
Because it's going to steal what we don't have to begin with, which is money in the pockets of people. It's going to increase inflation twofold.
I'm wise enough to know
when to shut
up.
We're at 8.5% now, and it's more like 17%. All right, Pam, where do you want to go next?
All right. Up next, we have LBJ and the Things He Did See by Gray I. Smith. Oh, and Gray, I'm thinking you can give that a read.
Thank you. LBJ and the Things He Did See. LBJ was walking in a park, you see, where he saw a chicken in a tree. He lowered out a man on a park bench. He was suddenly assaulted by a strong stench that was exalted as if it danced to its own ballad on his sandwich of chicken salad and bowl.
Oh, that's a rude awakening. Well, great read there, Gray. Thank you very much. Pam, what do you got?
Oh, yeah, this cracked me up, you know. Gray, you are always the king of brevity. And the wonderful rhyme here, that ending, oh, my God, I can just imagine. That's like when you're walking and you smell something and you realize that you stepped in the dog do only like 10 times as worse. Below sat a man on a park bench, was suddenly assaulted by a strong stench that was exalted as if it danced its own ballad on his sandwich of chicken salad. I mean, all the way through, just a wonderful brevity, wonderful humor. It reminds me of my oldest son. Whenever we would go for a walk, and it wouldn't happen all the time, though. It seemed like anytime we go for a walk, it was guaranteed that he would be the one that a bird would poop on. So, we'd make jokes by standing far away from him and saying, okay, we're just waiting for the birds to come along. Yeah, right? But great right here, Gray. Wonderful humor.
Yeah, thought real framework.
My bird shit.
That's even better. All right, Laura, how about you? What do you think?
Well, I thought it was hysterical. Gray is very visual in his presentation, and I could see the whole thing happening as a three-panel cartoon. It would be very funny. Nice job, Gray.
Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it.
Oh, what was that cartoon way back in the day? Something Side? It was always a single panel. I can't think about it. Anyway, Grave, I think the best thing to be said about this is, hey, shit always rolls downhill, so you better have an eye above or you're going to be eating that shit as it comes down. Yeah, and you'll never notice it on your chicken salad sandwich.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Gray. All right,
thank
Pam.
You.
Where you want to go?
All right. And up next, I'm going to put my right. And this is called On the Cutting Board And it was inspired by the prompt, I don't know much, but I know the difference between chicken salad and chicken shit. And it goes like this. The plumage of peacocks on the cutting board, knife that slices and dices like a knick-knack, paddywhack, a dog has lost his bone in a bullshit fricassee, cutting the spine of a fish, goggling the eyes of a strumpet blast, unleashed wishes to know the thingamabobs on a sow's ear, blowing the stones, a bedtime slipper of piss from your bedkeeper's slippage of soiled door knockers, making a chopped salad of misfortune, uppercut backstabs, sounding the trumpet of loose lips, sink ships in the Tweedledee and Tweedledum sewage treatment, blowing the nose in a sound wave of assault and battery. There's nothing here but the smell of bootlicker flapdoodles paying homage to a horn swaggler hedge creeper, peeping the tomcats in the tepid bath water, tossed with the baby of a queef-eating meter, sacking the chicken in a boudoir pose of jack-in-the-box off his rocker, a laughing stock of boiled funny bones elbowing the jelly roll in a steam of lobcocked fowl clucking chit tinsel, serving the masses in a stink of stains chucked into the shagbag stew of two shakes and greasy dribble down the drain. End poem.
Oh, shit. That was loaded. All right, Laurent, why don't you kick us off with this one?
You know, I'm sitting here with a mouth full of crackers and peanut butter. And I figured that you'd be laughing long enough to allow me to finish it. Such was not the case. Has a dispensary, a modern type of dispensary, opened up in your neighborhood recently and you did not know and take advantage of their finest offerings? And this is the result of some phenomenal wordplay. I don't know. What is prompt number two?
It's the one about knowing the difference between chicken shit and chicken salad.
Well, I would say that after you've gone through this, you either know the difference very well or you're concealed. You're not knowing the difference. I have rarely enjoyed such wordplay. I mean, almost anything is the bootlicker flapdoodles paying homage to horn swagger hedge creeper, peeping the tomcats in the tepid bathwater. It left me breathless. This is quite fine. Quite fine. I will be rereading this.
Thank you, Laurent.
All right, Gray. Now that your eyes have come back to normal, what do you think?
You know, what a punch to the brain that is. It really has an incredible wordplay and fantastic imagery throughout. You know, it's a total knockout. And I thought you did a fantastic job reading it as well, Pam.
Thank you, Gray.
That's fine. Thank you, Gray. I got to say, the plumage of peacock, it kind of hit me with a dog, and a dog has lost his bone in a bullshit frequency. That seems to that's got to be men in general. Blowing the stones of bedtime slipper of piss from your bedkeeper slippage of stalled door knockers. He's bending over and getting a little nature philosophy. But I did think that one that Laurent hit on, there's nothing here but the smell of bootlicker flat boots paying homage to a horn swaggler head creeper pigment tomcat in the tepid bath water. Kind of hits on the note of somebody looking in the window as the lady bathes. The next one hits on with a toss with the baby of a queef-eating monster. You toss the baby with the bathwater. Something didn't happen. Stacking the chicken in a boudoir pose of jack-in-the-box off his altar. The pop-up never happened. So much for the jack in that box. And plucking chip tinsel. Kind of sputtering of a chicken in the moment who's kind of spitting out loose dregs. and the stank of stain chucked into the shag bag stew, about 2 shakes and a goofy dribble down the drain. Yeah, that really wasn't worth it.
Thank
you,
Rick.
Gotta wash that shit out.
And thank you for the inspiration.
Well, that's going a little bit further than chicken shit for chicken salad. But it did seem that the chicken salad joke was a well-liked performing piece.
Yeah, people really did like that one, that's for sure. But, yep.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have We have Me and LBJ by Kenny W. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Me and LBJ by Kenny W. He's so dumb he couldn't fart and chew gum at the same time. By LBJ. Since when I should like to ask, have men been able to multitask? Best concentrate on one thing at a time, passing wind being a specialty of mine. Were you then to put gum in my mouth? I would completely stop farting about. As I chomped away at his new task, there would be but silence from my arms. Present this simple challenge to my fair lady. In no time she'd be blowing bubbles, maybe. At which end I am too polite to say, but this would impress LBJ either way. The dream scene would be us together, me on trumpet, she chewing the heather. There would then be an easy way of telling who would come out the sweetest smelling. Mr. Johnson's throat was about Gerald Ford, of whom he never said a decent word. From that day he set a new precedent. Gum quotes coming from the president. And Tom.
All right, Ray, why don't we start with you, please?
Hey, you did a fantastic read, Rex. But, you know, I like the poem. It has an excellent storyline to it. And I really like the flow as well. But, you know, the dream team would be us together, me on a trumpet, she chewing heather. There would then be an easy way of telling who would come out the sweetest smelling. And then that penultimate stanza, Mr. Johnson's quote was about Gerald Ford, of whom he never said a decent word. From that day, he set a new precedent. Dumb quotes coming from the president. Yeah, just a fantastic capturing of the prompt.
Thank you, Gray. Laurent, how about you?
I got to give it to prompt number two, stanza number two. Were you then to put gum in my mouth, I would completely stop farting about. I chopped away at this new task. It would be but silence in my hours. Very nicely done all the way through. Each stanza is amusing, brings a chuckle. Has something to say about Mr. Johnson, that's for sure.
Excellent. Thank you, Ross. Sam, what about you?
Yeah, this is great. Wonderful rhyme and flow. Great humor. I like that how he approaches it at a self-deprecating humor and the idea of I can relate to this. And gives the idea of how, you know, he can't multitask, you know, but his wife can and present this simple challenge to present my simple challenge to my fair lady. In no time she'd be blowing bubbles, maybe. At which end I am too polite to say, but this would impress LBJ either way. The dream team would be us together, me on a trumpet, she chewing the heather. There would then be an easy way of telling who would come out the sweetest smelling. Oh my gosh, those lines just cracked me up. Wonderful lines all the way through. Great fun and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I got the thought of toot toot, the train's leaving the station.
I purposely left the beginning of that quote out, which said, Jerry Ford, he's so dumb he couldn't fart and chew gum at the same time. But Kenny went and checked it out for the full context and dug into it. Nicely done there, Kenny. And it was pretty funny, too. And that second last stanza was really good. Plus the finishing note, too. Yes, this was about Jerry Ford. Nicely done, Kenny. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. You're back on this.
All right. Well, before we move on to the next poem, I'd like to mention that we have only three poems left, and they're all fairly short. So, if any of you gentlemen want to put something on the topic board, and it doesn't have to be on topic, you know, just something you'd like to share on an after midnight show, go for it.
We can do that.
Let's see. I am going to have you reading next, though, Laurent, just to give you a heads up.
No problem. Anytime. Go right ahead.
All right. And we have Stanley in the Bath by Anton Ansford. And go ahead and give that a read, please.
Stanley in the Bath. Just as Stanley was about to fill the bath in his birthday suit, he heard the doorbell go. He pulled open the door and saw a woman in her 30s with a bottle of wine in one hand and an empty mug in the other. Hello, the curvaceous beauty said. I came to borrow a cup of sugar. Now, Stanley was an experienced man, so he knew what that meant. But Stanley now, he has a dilemma. He was forced to choose between a lovely woman and his bath. But then he decided to try his luck. End point.
Great read, Laurent. Gray, why don't we take it with you first?
Beautiful read, Laurent. And I like the poem. I mean, it... it was funny. I mean, you know, this guy's having a bath and then he hears the doorbell glow. He sees a woman in her 30s and a bottle of wine in one hand and an empty mug cup in another. Hello, the courageous beauty said. I came to borrow a cup of sugar. Now Stanley was an experienced man and he knew that what that meant. But Stanley had now had his dilemma. He was forced to choose between his bath and his woman. And I thought it was just a fantastic capture of the poem. But, yeah, I definitely, you know, bathe after my visit with the woman.
Thank you, Greg. Pam, what about you?
Yeah, this was funny. And he actually expanded on it because when I first read it, and he hadn't had in his AN or anything like a work in progress, so I don't know if he decided later to expand on it. But when I had first read it, it had ended at the point where it says, pulled open the door and saw a woman in her 30s with a bottle of wine in one hand. And that's where it ended at. And so, yeah, I had commented, that's a nice surprise for Stanley, better than someone spitting in his soup or pissing in his tent. An excellent brevity, very well done. And I thought it was, you know, fine there, but I have to say I am really glad that he expanded on the thought because it really helped the humor along to see this poor guy who he's got this knowledge of women. He knows what it means when a woman wants to borrow a cup of sugar. He knows what he's being offered up. But as Gray pointed out, he also realizes now he's got to choose between that nice relaxing bath and the woman. And so, you know, just really clever, very fun, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Laurent, how about you? What'd you think?
Is this like what's behind door number two? I'm right with Stanley. I'd have to try my luck. I mean, you know, there's always sugar. But, that bottle of wine says it all. and left open his mouth.
Excellent. All right. I like how he left this open-ended, because you notice Justice Stanley was about to fill the bath in his birthday suit. He heard the doorbell going, pulled open the door, and saw a woman in a third with a bottle of wine in one hand and an empty mug in the other. The thing there is, he went through the door with nothing on, and there's no comment on that, or about maybe the surprise in the eyes of the woman. So this kind of hits on that notion of a well-played scene that was meant to happen. And trying his luck, well, he leaves that open-ended too. So maybe that trying his luck turned into a romping good fuck. All right, Pam, what you want to do next?
All right, let me go grab the next one, and the All right, and back to Late Night Poets. All right, up next we have The Bath by Dammit Dave, and Gray, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, Eva. I take a bath on Saturday to wash the weekday blues away. Some fizzy balls are in the tub, and scented candles join the club. I shower on the other days, but they don't rinse away malaise that comes from working 9 to 5 and puts my stress in overdrive. But Saturday, the time is right to get some bubble bath delight. The stereo plays soothing sounds while toes and fingers turn to prunes. And when I'm done, I tend to yawn as I put my pajamas on and slide into my waiting bed for dreams to fill my weary head and poem.
Great read there, Gray. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off? What'd you think?
Can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. Pam?
Absolutely. Great read there, Gray. You know, as always, Dammit Dave has wonderful rhyme and flow, spot on meter. I like that he brings us into the whole experience of the bath, not just the bath itself, but the music that's being played, the scented candles. The second and third stanzas were definitely my favorite. I really liked the use of the word malaise. And the line, but Saturday, the time is right to get some bubble bath delight. The stereo plays soothing tunes while toes and fingers turn to prunes. Very relatable because, you know, I think at one time or another, we've all spent enough time in the bath to have our toes and fingers turn into prunes. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. And, Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Pam's comment that it was relatable. I mean, you know, everybody can picture themselves doing this and enjoying the moment and the splendor that that brings. I mean, it kind of just feels like a warm bath on a Saturday night after a long week. So beautifully expressed and captured the prompt wonderfully.
Thank you, Gray. And the rock.
Wow. There's something about a good hot bath that it's you enjoy differently at different stages in your life. As a baby, you're going to get a bath in the kitchen sink. As you grow a little bit older, of course, you're going to have baths where you need to have them in the bathtub. And you can enjoy a nice hot bath in order to rinse away the malaise, which is unfortunate for him because it doesn't. But Saturday, the time is right to get some bubble bath delight. And then later on in life, all of a sudden the bathtub becomes something you have to be very, very careful of. It becomes difficult to step in and out of. And you daren't sit for fear you can't get back up. So you begin to start standing in the bathtub. All kinds of ways to enjoy a bathtub.
Well said, Rob. I get that. I get a sort of a double angle in this, because either Dave's rolling out his feminine side with this
some fizzy balls are in the tub and scented candles join the club, and the sort of hysteria plays soothing tunes while toes and fingers turn the broom. Or he's actually hitting on the notion of him watching his wife take the bath on Saturdays and enjoying the play out. She drops in the fizzy balls. Otherwise, those fizzy balls are actually his. And the candles, I don't know about you, but I'm not putting scented candles in the bathroom so I can take a bath. I'm going to take a bath. I'm going to sit in the hot water and let my aching bones go and be out. So this kind of hits on that note of maybe he's watching his wife or the woman he loves take the bath. Nicely done, Dave. All right, there. What you got next?
All right, up next, and great comment there, Rex. Awesome observation. And up next we have "Kiss My Red, White, and Blue Ass" by Julie Buck. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
"Kiss My Red, White, and Blue Ass" by Julie Buck. Upon the hill, I see lies, corruption, and I spit on conflict while others piss on real. Legislation is a pile of paper crap, politics a big fat joke. Not the wisest apple in the cart, though. I've won awards and medals, so I must be smart. And I do know about trying to fool an old fool. What goddamn nerve, this plate of bunk I don't deserve. America and her ample fat with her apple pie grit. I can always tell the difference between old glory sincerity and cheeky chicken shit. I'm the brawn in your brass, so juicily fit in the red, white, and blue ass. And poem. I think that chicken chip and chicken salad angle has been played out quite well tonight. The lot likes to kick us off.
Well, Julie Buck, the habit of calling a spade, so to speak. Upon the hill, I see lies, corruption, and I spit on conflict, while others spit on real. She realizes how phony legislation can be, and how politics is a big fat joke that doesn't necessarily produce the smartest people. And as an American, this plate of bunk I don't deserve. And there's a little bit about old glory sincerity and cheeky chicken shit. Really nice. And she's got a rather strong ending. The brawn in your brass. So juicily kiss my red, white, and blue ass. Well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Gray, how about you?
I like it. I mean, you know, it's in your face, you know, stand proud, kind of right. And I really liked it. You know, it was, so I must be smart, and I do know about trying to fool an old fool. What goddamn nerve, this plate of bunk I don't deserve. America and her ample fat with her apple pie grit. I can always tell the difference between old glory sincerity and cheeky chicken shit. Just a fantastic take on the prompt. Well expressed. Excellent read, Rex.
Thank you, Gray. Pam? It's up to you.
All right. Well, great read there, Rex. I really like what, you know, Gray had to say about it being a stand-up, you know, in-your-face kind of right. And I, too, really like that line that say, I can always tell the difference between old glory sincerity and cheeky chicken shit. And to me, there really was this whole idea of somebody who's not going to take all of the bull crap. I thought it had a strong ending line. You know, I liked the attitude in it. And I like that it's all about saying, hey, you know what? I can see the corruption. I can see the lies. You know, I'm not this old fool. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, great comments, everybody. And you covered everything, so I'm going to hit on that little tidbit down the back. I like the double angle meaning in cheeky chicken shit, the sort of quit showing your asses. We know what's coming out. and then that bottom end of So Juicy Kiss My Red, White, Blue Ass. A nice finish to a bit of a nice, funny finish to a bit of a straightforward, as Gray said, in your face, notations. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right. Up next, we have your poem, Lawrence. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Righto. This is written for a Bukowski contest. It's called Putting the Beasts Back in Their Cages. I walk crazy, tilted a little to the left, with a hitch in my step. Long city blocks are my desert challenges. A couple of feet at a time, shuffling along with an old walking stick of red ironwood, probably older than me. I whip the air with it occasionally and howl a bit. I don't know. It feels good. Quiets the cravings. Puts the beasts back in their cages. Not often, though, otherwise they want to talk to me about it. There's debts to be collected from old concrete. Walk some of these blocks so often my sweat and pain is burned into them. I'm a plank owner. Some wise ass glued a silver half dollar to the sidewalk. I got it, though, with the help of a brick. I had to talk to them about that one. Damaged city property. They asked me if I thought I was crazy. Probably. But Noel is never far away when I need it. End point.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
All right. Well, first of all, great, great read there. I like that this takes a look at how life in the city can be so crazy that it's like the idea of being a bunch of beasts trapped in a cage. Like with nowhere to go, nowhere to find freedom or personal space. At least that's what it says to me. I whip the air with it occasionally, howl a bit. I don't know, it feels good, quite the cravings, puts the beast back in their cages. There's got to be collected. What's that?
His own beasts.
Oh, okay.
That was one of the
posts
on the contest, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see. Huh. But yeah, wonderful use of imagery, very Bukowski style language. My sweat and pain is burned into them. I'm a plank owner. Some wise ass glued a silver half dollar to the sidewalk. I got it though with the help of a brick. Just a really strong imagery all the way through, and I don't know, just a really harsh look at life. So, excellent write.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was skillfully crafted. You did an amazing read on it, Mark. But you know, the whole poem is epic in its presentation of this. I don't know. To me, I get a feeling of loneliness, this loneliness, but the willingness to keep putting one foot in front of the other, to keep trudging through life at all costs. So just a beautiful presentation, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you, Grant. Another one? I know this is walked off of a Bukowski thought, but damned if it doesn't walk kind of on the note of House. Have you seen that show?
Yeah.
It does walk a little crazy at times, and he's got a walking stick that he uses, and he whips the air with it occasionally, and he has those beasts within that he lets out on a daily run, so to speak. But that sort of not put the beast back in the cage is not often, though. Otherwise, they want to talk to me about it. He still has that same thought, but it also walks in that note of the bluebird, that thing he doesn't want people to know about. Yes, every now and then it does, it is to be let out, so to speak.
Yeah.
I like the quote with that, I'm a plank owner. Some wise ass glued a silver half dollar to the sidewalk. I got it, though, with the heck of a brick. Had to talk to her about that one, damaged to the property. I like the thought of that because you don't come across real silver half dollars, and when you do, you might want to make sure you get a hold of it. It could be worth something. So, and they asked me if I thought it was crazy, probably, but normal is never far away when I need it. Again, that brings me right back to fucking the house, which is kind of hilarious because this walks in that tone of how he is. Pretty much, even though he's got the intelligence and smart and is always the smartest man in the room, there are plenty of times when he's batshit fucking crazy.
You're absolutely right. Nice job.
Thank you very much. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. And up next, I'm going to go ahead and put Gray's poem. And there you go, Gray. Go ahead and give it a read for us.
Okay, I figured since it's after midnight, why not? The bird. Dragging the waste of your shit-stained breath across the lily-white sheets of my silky inhale, you laughed at my disdain, and for that I shall rain down pain upon what you think is your right to my acknowledgement. First I sweep your feet from under you. You fall to the ground. That dampness is the blood caking in your hair. I abruptly pounce and drag you to my lair, the place inside my mind, and hang you upside down. Your tears flow, making mud as they mix with your crusting blood. I sit in front of you, sharpening my knife. You cry out, wah, 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 begging for your life. Oh, I'll save your life. It now belongs to me. That asshole of the mouth need never say a word. This lair is a cage, and you are the bird. End poem.
Great read there. Great. Thank you very much. Is that what you do up there on cold, lonely nights in the winter when there's nothing else to do? Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Wow. That is, what, when you want to write dark, you write dark. Dark enough to make the reader uncomfortable with the power of words and images. Good Lord. I'm not quite sure what to say. I know you're not a serial killer. I don't imagine that you're cutting up any bones in your basement either. So this is a wonderful product of your imagination.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lawrence.
That's nice you said, Lawrence. All right, Pam.
You know, I am not 100% convinced that this is a right of his imagination. It's always the quiet ones you have to watch out for. I'm telling you.
That's hilarious.
No,
thank you, Pam.
I thought this was great. I actually remember this one. I remember this one because I remember thinking, wow, because, yeah, you do tend to write gentler stuff, and you came out with this, and it was like watching somebody who had always sat quietly in the corner, you know, suddenly come out, both fists swinging. And I really liked this all the way through, but especially I abruptly pounce and drag you to my lair, the place inside my mind, and hang you upside down, your tears flow, making mud as they mix with your crusting blood. And then my other favorite part was when you did the wah, 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 and it sounded like some sort of electric guitar or something. I thought that was just great. Oh, and you really do capture the whole serial killer vibe very well. So excellent, right?
Thank you,
Pam. Well, I thought those first two lines were going to be a little different since you are dragging the waste of your shit-stained breath across the lily white sheets of my silky inhale. I thought you were going to bitch at your girlfriend in the moment because she was foul in the morning trying to give you a kiss. And, oh, God, no. You didn't go there. You went deep into the dark hole of of her despair while becoming very enthusiastic with what you were going to do with her, falling her upside down. Boy, that comes to the nice notion, her blood and mixing into blood and tears mixing in the mud, and the fact that there's going to be a gutting. This does walk a nice tone of seriality and understanding what it means and how to feel dressed in the moment. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right, Pam.
All right, I'll go grab the next one. I was just curious and taking a look at what show had that had been like 2 years ago. And, all right. And I will go ahead and put my write-up next, which is a brevity that I wrote for a contest. And it's called In a Massacre of Reason, and it was inspired.
You picked that on purpose, didn't you?
A what?
You picked that on purpose because it fits right with Gracie's.
Actually, no. Gracie's, I think, is slightly more violent than mine, but but the title fits nicely. And it was actually inspired by a Mark Twain quote, "You can't reason with your heart. It has its own laws and thumps about things the intellect scorns." And it goes like this. In a massacre of reason, reality becomes morphine thumps lingering on the clefts in the brow, expectations lowered to a degree below the ego's barrel ride over frothy falls. Caught in the act of slacking sense, a guilty verdict pleaded. Erase the dam inserted into the how-to manual of confetti parades and steaming piles of manure, and you'll find the truth of a fool's love. End poem.
You do like bringing manure along for the ride, don't you? Must be Wisconsin Alden Town. Gray, why don't you start us off, please?
You know, I thought it was wonderfully crafted. You know, your language and your imagery is fantastic and mesmerizing. It has a lot of impact in such a short poem. Erase the dam inserted into the how-to manual of confetti parades and steaming piles of manure, and you'll find the truth of a fool's love. And, yeah, that's just an epic take on the prompt, yeah.
Thank you
wonderfully
very
well.
Much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gray. Laurent, how about you?
Well, truly a massacre of reasons swept along by the mad currents of the heart to the inevitable waterfall over which you tumble, finding at the bottom the truth of a fool's love. Excellent brevity, Pam.
Thank you. Thank you.
Reality becomes morphine thumps, lingering on the clefts in the brow. Clefts in the brow, that note of, what do they call it, raking your forehead into a look of disdain, so to speak. I like that morphine thumps, that little bit of the veins sticking out. And again, that ego's barrel ride of a frothy fall. That was a nice thought. And caught in the act of slacking sense and guilty verdict pleaded. Erase the dam inserted. And I thought that was into the how-to manual of confetti parades and steaming piles of manure. There's a picture one wants. Hey, the confetti parades, they might be real, but they're actually cow shit spread across the sky for you to dip into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we actually have a couple parades here in this town every year, and one of them is the rodeo parade. So of course there's a bunch of horses in it, and they actually have boys from like the middle school who boys and girls from middle school whose job is to roller skate behind the horses with shovels.
That's the funny part. At least the horse shit is
It's firm. You can pick it up with shovel. You actually need a snow shovel for the casket.
Exactly. Well, just a few minutes left. So if you want to, I don't know, have any upcoming shows we want to promote, and then, you know, wrap things up.
What do you got for Twisted Tuesday?
Well, for Twisted Tuesday, Naomi ran a contest, which I believe is closed, and it had a variety of, like, surrealism-style art. You know, if people want to, they can still write for the topic. I would definitely check it out, see if it inspires. And, of course, readers and commenters are always welcome.
Okie dokie. And, oh, Wednesday, Jean's got a contest up for the art of sensuality. I can't remember her.
Yeah.
But she's got a quote. Has she got a quote?
It's a seduce me or yourself contest. Seduce or be seduced.
And I've got a... Olivia Newton-John for Sunday, since she died about 10 days ago, I think it is. So anything Olivia Newton-John or just a tribute piece, so come one, come all, bring it on. Maybe you get into a little group, or maybe the group gets into you.
Very cool.
Great show, Pam. Thank you very much. And Lavonne, great.
Can I mention my free contest? I mean, is that okay?
Go ahead.
Real quick. Okay. For Break On Through, I got The Poetry of Delmore Schwartz. For The Art of Seduction next week, I have Red Wine. And for After Midnight next week, we have Will Cuppy. And great show tonight, Rex.
Yep. Thank you very much. And Laurent, great. Thank you for joining us for reading comments. Much appreciated. And we'll see you again next Tuesday and every other day of the week. So come visit. Good night, all.
Have a great night, everyone. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Much love.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.